There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Before we start, I just want to mention the sponsor for this episode, and that is Spoken, a company that helps you to improve your English online in various ways. Spoken have produced a murder mystery story for learners of English called The Wrong Man. If you're into pop culture and learning English, then this should be perfect for you. Their story is specifically designed to help you learn English, and it's all done through the medium of a cool and mysterious detective narrative. It's audio, it's all recorded properly with actors and atmospheric background sounds. It sounds brilliant. What they're offering to you is completely free, and it's this. All four parts of this audio story, transcripts for each part so you can listen and repeat or just check all the words and phrases that you're hearing, study guides to really help you learn English effectively from each part of the story, access to their Facebook group where there are live video conversations with the actors and writers, and you can send them messages as well to ask questions about the English in each part if you want. And also, there's a chance to win some prizes in the giveaways that they're doing. Get all of that stuff and more completely free by going to getspoken.com/LEP. So that's The Wrong Man, solve the murder mystery and learn English at the same time. getspoken.com/LEP. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 589 of Luke's English Podcast. This episode is a big ramble about Avengers Endgame, Marvel Studios and comic book movies in general with my friend Fred Iango. I should point out that this episode contains no spoilers for Avengers Endgame because neither of us have seen the film yet. We're both fans of these films and we become a bit like excited children when talking about this subject. And so we end up talking quite quickly, interrupting each other, talking over each other sometimes, just like people normally do when having lively conversations. Some of you will be glad because you like the challenge of the faster conversations on this podcast, but others might find it harder. If you find it difficult to follow, my advice is to stick with it. You will get used to Fred's voice and the general speed of the conversation after a while. Fred is very articulate and insightful about these films, particularly the business side of comic book movies in general. Watch out for loads of really useful descriptive language throughout this conversation as we talk about characters, plot points, and Marvel Studios' approach to the business of movie making. The whole conversation is long, but so is Avengers Endgame. It seems appropriate somehow. But unlike Avengers Endgame, this episode is in two parts. You're listening to part one. Part two should be available very soon. The film is 3 hours and 1 minute long. People are wondering how they're going to get through the film's marathon running time without taking a toilet break. I think you won't have the same issue while listening to this double podcast episode because you can just pause, answer the call of nature, and then carry on. Or perhaps even do your business while listening on headphones. Please do just remember to wash your hands when you're finished. I hope you enjoy our chat and that you're also looking forward to seeing Avengers Endgame in cinemas soon. I'm going to see it tomorrow. I'll talk to you more at the end of this episode, but now let's jump into my conversation with Fred, and here we go. So, hello, Fred. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So, I think I'm just going to go straight into my introduction.
Yes.
You can just be here just to kind of...
nod.
I hope you don't mind sitting here while I go through this. There's about one and a half pages of this. So, hello, everyone. Here's a new episode of Luke's Film Club on Luke's English Podcast. It's been a while since the last episode of Film Club. In this series, I like to talk about films, sometimes obscure ones that you might not know, and sometimes big blockbusters that lots of people are talking about. This episode is firmly in the second category, as we're talking about one of this year's most highly anticipated film releases, and that is, the film is Avengers Endgame.
Woo woo!
So, but here's a disclaimer before we start, Fred. I need to give my audience a little disclaimer before we begin.
I understand.
So, this entire episode, listeners, is devoted to the discussion of this new Avengers film, but also to the subject of Marvel movies in general, okay? I mean, superhero films produced by Marvel Studios. That's stuff like Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, The Avengers, etc. So, there might also be, as well, some Star Wars chat here.
For obvious reasons.
For obvious reasons, because the new trailer's arrived. Mm-hmm. Maybe at the end of the episode. So I just want to say right from the start, if you're not a fan of those films, of Marvel films and stuff like Star Wars, then this episode probably won't be for you. I realize that this might not be for everyone, okay? I know it doesn't seem to make much sense to say to some of my audience, you might not want to listen to this.
But I mean, we're going to talk also about like movies and the movie industry in general a little bit. So if you're a fan of movies, I think it will interest you.
Yes.
I mean, I think so.
But if you're not into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, then you might not get a lot of the references that we're talking about. That's the thing.
Maybe. Yeah, like the generic stuff, yes, but yeah, the deep, more, let's say, nerdy.
Yeah.
More specific to the MCU. Well, say MCU, for example, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is going to be said a lot in this episode, I think.
Yeah, we're going to say MCU quite a lot.
For that specific stuff, probably more for people who know the movies a little bit.
I'm sure there are people listening to this who haven't seen any of the films, or maybe some people have seen maybe Iron Man or some other things.
Ones, like maybe an Avengers here or a Guardians of the Galaxy there, you know, but probably not Ant-Man and the Wasp. I assume, like the ones with the lower box office.
Yeah,
I assume have not been watched by everybody.
I wonder how many of my what percentage of my audience have seen, first of all of the Marvel films in the list, and what percentage of people have seen some of them, and what percentage have seen none of them at all. I wonder what that would be.
I don't know. How can you estimate like the amount of people who've watched a movie? Like, if you say, for example, a movie has like $1 billion box office, and you say it's like $8 a ticket in average, or no, maybe like more like 15, I think.
Yeah.
Let's say 10, round number. Uh-huh. So it's like 100 million people who watched it?
In
general.
In the world?
Yeah, like globally?
I don't know,
is
really.
Is that helpful? I don't know.
I don't really know. But I mean, just from me, my experience of being an English teacher and meeting groups of learners of English from around the world, there's always some people in the room who don't know what the hell you're talking about.
Yeah, of course.
When you're talking about any subject.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Like, even stuff like milk. You've never heard of milk, really?
I've been a water guy my whole life.
In my country, we don't have milk. Really?
We don't dare.
Okay, fair enough.
I don't know. I would say, like, if, let's say, I don't know, half the people don't care about movies at all in general.
Yeah.
Especially if they're, like, big and loud. And then, I don't know, let's say maybe 15-20% of the people.
Yeah,
I've seen like some or all the movies.
We don't know, basically.
Yeah, we don't know. I will estimate. Like,
the point I was saying is that I'm sorry, listeners, if some of you haven't seen these films and you're not interested in this stuff. But then again, Avengers Endgame, which is the culmination of a massive 21 film narrative, this film is coming out in cinemas at the end of this month and is hotly anticipated. As I said, this is an international phenomenon, along the lines of other big franchises like Star Wars, Game of Thrones, and so on. People are predicting that this film is going to become the highest grossing film on its opening weekend worldwide of all time ever.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, a good chance. If we're talking about a film that's got large appeal, there's a good chance that lots of people will be interested in this.
This is the one. This is the one.
Yeah, but if you're not, then I do apologize. Mm-hmm. So this is an event movie on an international scale, and I'm certain that plenty of my listeners will be interested in this and will want to hear us talking about it. That's why I'm doing this episode. If I was learning English, Fred, I think I would want to listen to people talking about this film.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you were learning another language,
yes,
you'd probably think, well, I want to listen to content. I want to listen to conversations.
Conversation.
I would personally like to hear people talking about a film like this.
Yes.
Rather than just the usual, you know, sort of textbook stuff.
Yeah. Tenses.
Tense. Well, that's important. The tenses is still important.
It's key.
I'm really excited to see it. Perhaps, listeners, you're planning to watch it too, maybe in the original English version, if that's possible where you live. But I just want to, in the most British way possible, apologise in advance for those of you who have no interest in this film franchise at all. Sorry. I'm just living up to the British stereotype.
Yeah, obviously.
Maybe you will choose to listen to this and it will be a sort of introduction to Marvel movies and you'll decide to check them out and you'll enjoy them. Or maybe you'll just skip this episode altogether. It's up to you. Other episodes will be coming along soon. And of course, if you're looking for other content from me, you could always sign up to my premium service to hear episodes focusing specifically on grammar, vocabulary and pronunciation. Just an idea.
Yes, great idea.
But anyway, that's the disclaimer out of the way, so now let's get stuck in. The plan is to talk about Avengers Endgame, but also cover most of the other Marvel films that we've had so far, and also talk about the main characters. This could easily become several episodes. We'll try, you know, we can't possibly cover everything.
No, not even try.
No. I'm joined today by Fred Iango, making his third appearance on the podcast.
That's me.
Fred is a friend of mine from the Paris comedy scene. He's from Cameroon, but he lives in Paris, and he's a big fan of films. Fred's first appearance was in episode 430, and you can go back to that one if you'd like to learn more about Fred, his background, and how he learned English.
Yeah.
So now let's get started with this episode of Film Club on Luke's English Podcast, and what I'd like to do is play the audio from the second Avengers Endgame trailer. So, here is Avengers Endgame trailer number 3, just to get us in the mood. Here we go.
If we do this, we'd be going in shorthanded.
Yeah, you mean because they killed all our friends?
We owe this to everyone who's not in this room to try.
It's not about how much we lost. It's about how much we have left. We're the Avengers. We gotta finish this. You trust me?
I do.
You could not live with your own failure. Where did that bring you? Back to me.
Tickets on sale now.
Oh my goodness.
Damn.
Had you seen that before?
No, not this one.
How do you feel straight away?
Oh God, like a child again. It's like, oh, this is so good. I just want to watch it so much.
Yeah, you're just excited now. Okay, let me just go back to where we were before then, which was here on my Google document. Oh, so
I'm loving this.
Here's a quick summary of the plot of the film from Wikipedia. It says this: adrift in space with no food or water, Tony Stark sends a message to the love of his life, Pepper Potts, as his oxygen supply starts to dwindle. Meanwhile, the remaining Avengers, Thor, Black Widow, Captain America, and Bruce Banner, must figure out a way to bring back their vanquished allies for an epic showdown with Thanos, the evil demigod who decimated the planet and the universe in the previous chapter of the series, Avengers
Infinity War.
So, there you go. So, you know, in terms of this being a big event movie, what's the sort of context in terms of the film studio and the work they've done on this so far?
You mean the little history?
Setting the stage.
Yeah, so it's the first movie was Iron Man 2008. So they've done 21 movies this far. This is the 22nd.
Yeah.
They were built in three phases. First phase being until the first Avengers. Second phase being until the second one, I think. And then third phase, like all the movies after that up to this one. It changed quite a bit. I mean, we're talking about it, and I was telling you that it was like a small movie studio, which was, I mean, not really a movie studio. Marvel, originally they make comics.
Yeah.
They used to publish comics since, the 50s, around that. After DC Comics, Superman, Batman, all that stuff. And then came Marvel Comics later. And then, around, 2000s, they were really, in financial trouble. So they had to sell their big properties.
Did they?
They sold X-Men to Fox. They sold Spider-Man to Sony.
Yeah.
And then they were left to, the nobodies of their comics, like Iron Man, Thor, which, I mean, I didn't really know. When I was small, younger, I read Spider-Man, Batman comics, TV shows, the iconic Batman in the 90s, Spider-Man comic books, the Superman movies, all that stuff, but really Iron Man, and I don't know, how do you call that? Captain America, I really didn't know anything. Maybe Hulk a little bit. Hulk a little bit was more famous than the TV show. More famous figure, but you really had to start from the ground up with the very little known and not very famous Iron Man in 2008, and it was a smash hit. It was a great movie. As I told you, I rewatched it recently.
Yeah,
great, great, amazing movie.
Why is it so good, do you think?
Because
this is the first Marvel Studios film.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as you just said, so some of my listeners might be thinking, but we've had so many superhero films. For me, it feels like people have been trying to make superhero films for years, and we had, I guess, The Dark Knight. I mean, there was a lot of superhero films in bits and pieces. Even the early ones, like the Superman film, I think from the 70s.
They were a little detached. There was no real global strategy, from a studio. There were always properties. There were also the Batman TV show, I think in the 60s with the, what's his name?
Adam West.
Was it Billy West? Adam West.
Yeah.
The Superman movies with Christopher Reeve. Even the Supergirl movies somewhere in there. There were old Captain America movies. Fantastic Four, of course, also a big franchise.
And we had Batman,
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton Batman, which I really like.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, great movie as well.
Yeah. And then we got
all the way to Joel Schumacher and Batman and Robin, which kind of killed that. But it was, all this effort was kind of work in, properties were isolated from each other, and there was no global studio practice of having the cinematic universes. And even around 2000, you had Blade, X-Men, those movies restarting kind of the superhero movie kind of renaissance at that point.
Yeah.
And then the big difference that happened with Marvel movies and Iron Man is that they had this strategy of not only are we gonna put some money to make good superhero movies for over a long period of time, but we're gonna do it so that we build that multi movie universe where everything's kind of connected, but not really. But we have a universe that extends to several movies,
and the idea, the prospect of other superheroes starring in each other's films.
Exactly, exactly.
The crossover appeal.
The Avengers movie, which is the big, the event movie, basically. You bring all you bring the super team together.
Yeah.
Exactly. That concept that I don't think really ever existed before in movies. In comics, obviously, it existed, but in movies, not really. I think, not like that. This is something else, which is why it's so big.
But, I mean, a lot of the superhero films, they try to make big franchises, like the X-Men, which is kind of reasonably successful.
No, it is, but it's already a team.
Started as a team.
Yeah, the build-up is different. So it's not exactly comparable, in terms of, bringing things together.
But also there was just something about the kind of Marvel formula for each film, which means that those films are just good. And a lot of other superhero films in the past, before the Marvel films happened 10 years ago with Iron Man at the beginning, a lot of those superhero films were pretty good. I mean, notable ones for me are The Dark Knight, which everyone talks about.
Yeah, great trilogy.
That Christopher Nolan trilogy, the Dark Knight and Batman Begins in particular being pretty good.
Yeah.
But they're a different thing. They're very serious and dark and stuff. Yeah. But other ones,
again, they're really their own little thing. They're I mean,
their own little universe.
Yeah, kind of exactly. Thing. It's three movies and out. And, yeah. And it's only it's Batman. It there's no intention to, you know, bring in Superman or, I don't know, connect it to a larger universe.
There was later after Christopher yeah. Nolan's films.
Yeah, we'll talk about
we'll talk about the Justice League and Batman yeah. versus Superman. Maybe we'll mention those.
No,
at some
Batman
point.
V Superman.
It's Batman V, not versus
V Superman.
Okay,
Dawn of Justice.
Batman V Superman colon Dawn of Justice.
BVS colon DOJ.
Right, what a mouthful. But a lot of films these days have got colons in them.
Yeah, yeah,
Avengers, yeah. Colon, Endgame.
Yeah, exactly. You know, no, that's, yeah.
I mean, Alien versus Predator, colon, Requiem.
Requiem.
Like, what? It's ridiculous. Anyway, but those other superhero films, for me, except for some notable exceptions, there was always something lacking. There was something yeah. missing. They weren't quite they weren't quite right. Like, there was the Ang Lee Hulk film.
Yeah, that.
I liked it, but I liked the sort of emotional intensity of the film because it was about a guy struggling with anger issues. And I felt like the version of Hulk they had in that film that I liked was the yeah. fact that he got bigger, noticeably bigger, the angrier yeah, he yeah. got. And I thought that was pretty effective. And there was the fight scene with him and his dad, Nick Nolte, at the end, which is actually a rather beautiful scene, I think. Of all the fight scenes yeah. in movies, that one is amazing. They're flying through the clouds and into the water and all that stuff. I thought that was quite
having
stunning.
Rewatched it recently, it kind of looks terrible to me.
Really?
But I there was an attempt to do something quite original with that movie, which I think doesn't hold up very well, but I see what you mean. Like, it was less of like scattershot attempts. Like, let's go and try this thing, this weird comic thing, you know, like it was. Yeah, I think it was seen as something like a little marginal, like for nerds, and you know, with no really global mass appeal.
It was kind of like filmmakers and studios were trying to make superhero films. Yeah. Everyone knew, like, we've got there's something here.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Particularly, all the filmmakers probably were all big fans of superhero comics.
Yeah, probably,
and they were like, we really want to make films that are as good as the comics, but no one managed to quite get it right.
Yeah. But get the tone of like comic book movies, like translating that tone in a movie. That was really like the first great thing Marvel did.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I don't know if they're the first one to do it, but to do it over such a long period and over like such different movies, because in the end they managed to really get the tone of the global tone of comic book movies, but also like specifically for different characters to get like a different feel for, like, you know, when you watch a Captain America movie and you watch a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, they're really different movies.
Mm.
But there's some unifying principle around like how to balance humor and like serious themes. Like, you know, I mean, there are lots of people dying in these movies. Lots of things about, like, you know, parents and loss and being abandoned. Oh, you know, like, you know, themes. Like real themes going through, but with some kind of like levity going all through it, which yeah. makes it, I don't know, it's just like a good pop mix.
It's just the good, yeah, the right balance of things, I suppose.
Definitely.
So, yeah, and also casting.
Yes, I mean, Robert Downey Jr.
In the original Iron Man film.
You were asking why it's. First of all, Robert Downey Jr. is just great Iron Man. Like, the character is great and his acting is great. They nailed it. Like, because I just rewatched it, so I remember it quite well. And the opening shot, the way he's introduced in the movie, you know, they're in Afghanistan and there's a convoy because he went to Afghanistan to present a new weapon. Mm-hmm. And before you see him, you just see a shot of his hand holding a whiskey glass. You know, with AC/DC blink, bam, ba-da-da, ba-da-da, you know, and you just see the whiskey glass and you kind of get it. And this guy in like sunglasses in the suit in like, you know, in a big Humvee, like with military people who also admire him. And then the big explosion because of
he's a weapons manufacturer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Originally, weapons Tony dealer. Stark, manufacturer.
He's a weapons manufacturer. He's a private sector weapons manufacturer.
Exactly. So basically, his father, Howard Stark, founded the Stark Company. In the story of the Marvel Universe, Stark was part of this team the Manhattan Project, who the team that did the atomic bomb. Mm. And then he helped with, you know, all the Captain America stuff, and he built a company. And then when he died, Tony took over the company. Tony was a little genius, you know, this kind of like pictures of him with like Steve Jobs in the movie and stuff like that.
Really? So he's kind of a young genius. We kind of place him in with those real people.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Steve Jobs and what's his name? Elon Musk. Bill Gates.
Yeah. But he's that level of
kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's a genius, but he's also a little bit off the rails.
Yeah, exactly. He's like a playboy type of character.
He's drinking, messing
with women, taking stuff very seriously. Mm-hmm. So he goes to Afghanistan, presents the new weapon called the Jericho. It's kind of like a scary multi-bomb rocket. It's kind of like, you know, big weapon, and he doesn't really care about the business he's doing, etc. Then the convoy is on to, I think, go back to America, gets attacked. He gets kidnapped by terrorists who are working with someone else. And then, while in captivity, with the help of an Afghani engineer he's captured with, who saves his life by building a battery in his chest. That's where it gets comic book. But it works. I don't know why. I couldn't tell you why it works.
I've never really understood what that thing is.
So the guy says,
"Sorry, listeners, we're talking about the glowing sphere
at the center of his chest.
What's the name of it? It's the arc reactor.
That's the arc reactor.
Yeah.
So basically, the concept is during the attack, he gets shrapnel over his chest.
Yeah.
And the guy builds a battery to keep the which. I mean, again, this is not a science movie,
but in theory,
like he says, he builds a battery to keep the shrapnel out of his heart. Basically, a magnet. He puts a magnet in his heart, next to his heart, not in his heart.
Yeah.
To keep the shrapnel out, to keep him alive, like a magnet plugged to a big battery.
Yeah.
And then he's asked to build like weapons for the guys, because one of the great things about Tony Stark that throughout the movie is that he's actually like a craftsman, like he does things himself with his hands, which is kind of like one of the other things that's quite interesting about that character, that you see him do a lot of things, of course comic book things, but you see him like, you know, knocking with a hammer on like steel, and then, you know, doing stuff, failing, retesting stuff, etc. So he's a real
engineer.
Yeah, he's an engineer guy. He's like, you know, sure, I'm a screw up and I drink too much and whatever, but at the core I'm just a guy, you know, nuts and bolts, I will build stuff. So he builds like the first prototype of his armor in the cave, because they gave him like all the things to build the weapons.
But I see. So his kidnappers have kept him in the cave, saying, "Build us weapons, or we'll kill you," kind of thing.
Exactly. Something. And instead of building the weapon, he builds the armor.
I see. You know,
unbeknownst to the guys, because he's being protected by the Afghani engineer who saved his life.
Okay.
So he manages to build the armor, like a very rough prototype. He barely escapes, gets in the desert.
There's that awesome scene that you've just reminded me of, where he first tries out the armor and he escapes from the cave.
Yeah.
And the terrorists are shooting at him. And it's frightening, actually.
Because of the
effectiveness of this suit that he's built. It's got flamethrowers on it.
Yeah, exactly. It's played a little scary. Like, in the cave, When the terrorists go to, like, you know, they realize something is wrong, and they go in the compartment, the room in the cave where he's hiding, and they only hear like the screws and the,
like,
exactly,
the servo motors
before they see the armor, before we see the armor, and it's kind of like this huge steel figure coming out of the dark, and it's kind of, you imagine, like, you know, facing that with a little gun, and it's like, sorry, it's a little scary.
Yeah. Fred says sorry because he keeps moving his...
Yeah, moving my mic.
The microphone keeps getting further away.
It cuts quite an ominous figure.
Yes.
Definitely. Yes, and it's scary, and it's rough, and the armor starts to, like, fall apart, because, you know, it's been built in a cave. It's not supposed to, like, take the brunt of, like, all the Kalashnikovs in this era.
Yeah.
And he barely manages to escape, and then he goes back to America, and then...
Okay, and then he goes, going to now... make this my work. I'm going to build a proper suit.
Yeah.
But isn't there a change in his character then?
There's no change?
Isn't there a change?
Yeah, yeah. Because when he comes back, he decides to stop completely the military operations, because he realizes, oh, I just, you know, managed to... Basically, the arc reactor you were talking about is first a technology they used to power some factories for the Stark Industries. And then he manages to basically miniaturize it. And that's what he has in his chest. So he decides, okay, I'm just going to become basically like an energy manufacturer, like this incredible source of energy, and I'm going to stop the military operations. Mm. That's when his partner... Obadiah Stane. What a great name.
Obadiah what?
Stane.
Stane.
S-T-A-N-E. Right. Obadiah Stane. Played by Jeff Bridges. Great.
Yeah.
Decides to basically double-cross him. Then you realize it was Obadiah Stane who helped the terrorists capture Tony Stark. There's a whole plot to get him out of the company, you know.
Spoiler alert.
Well, spoiler alert for,
for a 10-year-old movie.
2008. But yeah. But frankly, even with that, it's a movie I would recommend, because it's really funny, it's really witty. Tony Stark is a great character. Yeah, he has this change of heart. Yeah. But even then, he goes through like some more phases where he's very vengeful at first, and then he kind of realizes, okay, I have to like figure out who I am as Iron Man.
Yeah, there's a lot of complicated character development where he's kind of struggling with the idea of having this power and this technology, and whether he should use it or not, and what kind of systems he should be building.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads us into things like Avengers Age of Ultron, where he decides to create a defense system, which ultimately gets corrupted.
Yeah, in Iron Man 2, he deals with like alcoholism a little bit.
Yeah.
In Iron Man 3, with PTSD, basically, after the first Avengers, kind of like, you know, he almost died in space, so... a little affected.
Yeah,
decide to like give up the suit, basically, a Spider-Man 2. Like, no more of that. You know, I'm gonna automate everything. The armor are gonna be just like robots, drones. Empty robots. Yeah, exactly. And then Ultron is like, I'm gonna kill everybody.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, we're jumping around all over here, Fred, but the Age of Ultron for me, like... It's good, but it's not one of the best. I think that the bad guy, Ultron, is just another example of Hollywood. Basically, that Hollywood trope, which is when technology gets intelligent, it decides to obliterate all human life for no
reason. Turns out the real enemy is man.
Yeah, exactly. And it's always the same.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the technology develops and develops and develops and then goes, oh, I've realized... We need to destroy all of humanity. And then, okay, it's that thing
again.
You know,
about Avengers Age of Ultron, which I kind of agree with you, even though I liked it. I have my little story about it is that I watched it 5 times. Because I was basically, not because I loved it, because I was kind of running an experiment. I wanted to watch what happens to your mind when you watch a movie every day for 7 days.
Oh, so you watched it 5 days in a row?
Yeah.
You had a lot of time on your hands.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was unemployed and young. So, yeah, whatever.
Oh, I did that sort of thing, too.
Yeah. And so I kind of like, you know, the movie's kind of imprinted in my mind.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing where that not necessarily related to this movie, but I think when you watch a movie 5 times in a row, your mind shuts down automatically when uninteresting parts come up, and you wake up almost like as on the timer when the funny part comes up. And I will say that even at the 5th time, some jokes still landed. So I was like, okay.
Some of the jokes still worked.
Yeah. Like some jokes about like Vision, Thor, like, you know, a lot of things worked about that movie, I think. Like, even though it was like the end was so long. Ugh.
Oh, God.
Final battle.
Yeah, this is one of the things I don't like about those Marvel films, certainly in this sort of phase one and maybe phase two as well. It's just that every film, and it's all superhero films, have to end with a big computer-generated wrestling match where it's two CGI characters smashing each other.
Yeah, either that or, in the case of Ultron, one CGI person punching 100 useless robots or, you know, faceless characters. Happens in Avengers Age of Ultron. It's like, you know, dispensable enemies
to an extent. It happens in Avengers Infinity War as well, with those outriders, you know.
Even though I like them because they have the very scary thing where they sacrifice themselves mindlessly to break the wall.
Yeah,
you know, they add a little twist to make it more interesting, but yeah. But yeah, but yeah. In the end, that's not really the battle that matters. So
it's not. It's like, it's... Okay. All right. So yes. Listeners, as you can hear, this is very rambling stuff, but this is what you've, I guess, come to expect from episodes of this podcast. All right. So 21 movies since 2008.
Yes.
More than $18 billion of box office worldwide.
$18 billion.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it?
You know, I was thinking about something recently, is that when you go to a movie, and which is also kind of why I see all these big movies, whether I like them or not, it's really the only time you'll see like $200 million in your life. You know what I mean? Oh, $200 million worth of anything.
You can see how they spent the money.
Yeah.
So it's you're looking at something... where you can, yeah, you're looking at something incredible, yeah. In a sense.
You never see that anywhere in your life. You're like, this is, your eyes are open, and you're like, this, for the last 2 hours, that was $200 million.
I don't know if some buildings, how much some buildings cost to make.
That, oh, yeah, buildings. So,
I don't know how much they cost, though.
I don't know if I enjoy buildings as much.
I don't know. Some buildings are great, but...
that is true. I never thought about that.
I don't know. I'm just trying to... I can't think of a good example, but maybe something like the Shard in London. Yeah. I wonder if I can find out. It's just a
Shard
random...
Shard value?
Shard in London...
cost?
Construction cost... I'm just Googling this, folks. We got it.
Construction cost.
Construction
cost. Yeah, like even...
Hold on, let's find out what this is. Okay.
Yeah, 350.
We're looking at... No, it's £435 million.
Okay.
It costs £435 million to build the Shard, which is currently the highest building in the UK.
Oh, my God.
And it looks quite a lot like... the Tower of Barad-dûr from
Lord of the Rings.
From the Lord of the Rings, you know, Sauron.
Yeah, yeah.
With
the
eye of Sauron on the top. Eye. It looks a little bit like that. Yeah. I see.
Oh, that's a great movie.
It is a great film.
Maybe we'll do a film club about that one day.
The first Lord of the Rings, the Fellowship of the Ring is oh, it's great, isn't it? So you can see where the money has gone when you watch the film, because the effects are incredible. You know, Chris Evans's wig is really amazing.
That beard.
And he wears a wig, folks, by the way. Chris Evans is Captain,
I didn't know that,
Captain America. That blonde hair is actually a wig.
Wow.
Great
wig.
It's a very good wig, isn't it?
Very
you can
good
see
wig.
Where they spent the money.
Yes.
He's not bald in real life. It's because he's got brown hair.
He's not Captain America in real life either, so...
No.
Wig.
Exactly. He's Captain America's blonde. All right, so should we start talking about Avengers Endgame then? How much are you anticipating this film?
Well, very much, as I told you, because it's like the... I mean, everything is in the title, Endgame. It's been 11 years, I watched all the movies, and not only that, I mean, it's not just like completion. It's not just like, okay, let's finish it. It's because the Infinity War was surprisingly good. I really had low expectations for that movie because... Again, with big movies, usually they tend to be very, lukewarm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like they satisfy everybody, but they don't really try anything. And this one was like, whoa. First of all, great villain, I think.
Thanos.
For this type of movie, yeah. Especially when they had troubles with villains before, that being interesting or, you know, being like very... Hollywood and you know,
like Ultron, for example.
Yeah, like
the other problem I had with Ultron, as well as him being a bit generic in terms of I am a robot that wants to kill humans because all humans are bad. The other problem I have is that the CGI, he's made of metal, right? But his mouth moves like a normal person's mouth. That was a detail that I just couldn't deal with.
Oh my god, yeah. Five times and I didn't notice it.
I can't believe that wasn't something you picked up on. Because I was watching, the first time I saw it, I was watching it thinking, this is great, but why is Ultron's mouth moving like that? It's made of metal. I mean, I know it's vibranium.
I think vibranium
is like magic metal, but really.
What, does he have lips?
Has he got like little, why is his mouth moving around like that?
Yeah, I don't know.
When he's like, you know, if he does certain vowel sounds, the mouth goes rounded and like, he's metal. He's C-3PO for fuck's sake.
I never noticed it. You're totally right. That movie's ruined for me now!
That really, really kind of spoiled the film for me.
Yeah. some details like
not,
that.
Not entirely.
Cause no, but I see what you mean.
I will watch Ages, Age of Ultron if it's on the telly, because, you know, there's a bit of...
Like, I watch, like, he's basically opening scene at the party. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
When they do this thing with the hammer, testing that who's worthy enough to lift the hammer, and Captain America lifts it, and it's like...
It moves a little bit.
It's like, on the glass table.
That's interesting. Yeah. That oh, hold on. That's our doorbell. I'm going to pause the podcast.
Damn.
Okay, so that was the doorbell. The postman at the door delivering something fascinating.
Thank you, the post.
Yeah. So where were we? We were talking about Ultron. You were saying Infinity War was surprisingly good.
Yes, because, again, compared to the usual level of villainy, they managed to have a menacing figure. For example, what they do, they set him up as very strong, because first minutes, basically, he beats Hulk in, like, a three-punch knockout.
Not my favorite moment in the film, I have to say.
Why?
I thought Infinity War was great, but the fight scene with Hulk, I don't know what it was. First of all, Thanos is very big. Mm. He's kind of muscle-bound.
Yeah. Like stock.
He's very stocky and big.
Yeah.
And he's throwing these sorts of punches like, I don't know. Like, I think someone of that bulk and that size wouldn't
like
have...
Like he's a flyweight.
Yeah, he's like throwing like punches and it's kind of like he's rolling his shoulders into the punches.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, no, man, no. The bone structure, the site... it doesn't
the
work.
Bone structure.
Yeah, the bone structure. You're
all about bodies. The lips, mouth, the bone structure.
Yeah, the physical details matter to me.
Yeah.
But I just feel like Thanos wouldn't be able to
punch like that.
Not when he's that big and he's got all that armor on.
I don't know. For me, that was the surprising part, is that you wouldn't expect him to do it. But it's a very short thing. For me, it's more like, okay, maybe it's not the best executed thing. I have known nothing about boxing or fighting, so I wouldn't know. But I mean, it just sets him up as like physically he's like stronger than Hulk.
Yeah, they had to show us, look, Thanos is someone, a force to be reckoned with, and look at the way he deals with Hulk. And we're supposed to go, oh my god, he beat the Hulk.
Did he beat the Hulk, he beat him like so quickly and so easily. Then it's like, okay, kind of introducing a new level of enemy.
Yeah.
Then he
kills... But again, sorry, I have to stop you there, because the thing about the Hulk is that, as we've seen from previous films, the thing about him is that the more you punch him, the stronger he gets.
Yeah.
The more you attack him, the more angry and stronger he gets. That's the whole point of the Hulk, is that...
That is true.
He is this thing that the more you put bullets into him, the more strong, the bigger and stronger he gets.
Yeah.
And it's like he feeds off the anger and the energy. So so are we saying that Hulk has got little weak points, and if you punch him in those weak points, then that whole magic Hulk power doesn't work?
I think what they did, because you were talking about the Ang Lee Hulk, that happened.
Yeah.
What they tweaked, and I think why it works, and that's also used throughout the movie, is that, Hulk, more than being some kind of representation of emotions of Bruce Banner or something, is really a second character that lives with Bruce Banner. And in the end, he doesn't come out because of basically a confidence crisis, which is, you know, a tweak that I understand the way they live together in symbiosis. Like,
You're saying that people who've seen the film will know that Hulk doesn't come back in Infinity War after he gets beaten, and there's this whole thing of like Bruce Banner struggling.
Maybe Hulk needs therapy.
Yeah, they need to sit down and
30 minutes of Endgame are devoted.
Doctor Strange needs to have a word. But
he can't anymore.
He can't anymore. Wait, what was I going to say? Oh, damn. Down. What did you just say?
Oh, like about the crisis of confidence.
Yeah, that's it. I heard read that the Russo brothers, the directors of the film, say it's not really a crisis of confidence. It's not that he's scared of Thanos. Mm. It's that he's decided that he's fed up with Bruce Banner always. Basically, he's fed up with being just
used
by Bruce Banner. Because whenever Bruce Banner's like, okay, so we've got a problem. Okay, Hulk.
Come on.
It's like he's fed up with just being told what to do by Bruce Banner all the time.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this kind of like detaching those two characters in one body. That's a different route, definitely, but it has its ups and downs. Like in Ragnarok, is interesting. And
I find it it's also interesting to me that when Bruce Banner is Bruce Banner, can Hulk see and does he know what's going on? Because surely. Like, when Bruce Banner's like, okay, I need to become Hulk now. And Hulk's like, no. It's like, what, Hulk, are you watching? Do you know what's going on? It's like, no, no, no. It's like, are there sandwiches? No, I'm not coming. You know, like, Hulk is aware. He's aware of what's going on when he's not Hulk. And that's why he chooses not to come out.
Like, where is Hulk when Hulk is not out?
When Bruce Banner is not Hulk, is Hulk aware of what's going on in the world? Surely, if he's choosing not to come out, he must be aware of what's going on. Either that, or it's just simply when Hulk starts to be brought into existence. Yeah. Regardless of what's going on, Hulk's response is like, "Well, no."
Yeah,
but then
kind of a dormant conscience. Somewhere.
But that's a bad move by Hulk, isn't it? Because if Bruce Banner gets shot in the head during that time, then Hulk is also dead. Surely, because the only reason that Bruce Banner Yeah, but he's choosing not to come. I know what you're going to say, because in the Hulk film, they established that if Bruce Banner gets shot in the head... If he shoots himself in the head, or I suppose gets shot in the head, that Hulk instantly takes over and spits out the bullet, right? But if Hulk is refusing to come, then surely...
Maybe in case of emergency.
Maybe what Tony Stark should have done is like, okay, Bruce, so you're having trouble with Hulk. I'll summon him.
Yeah.
And just shoot Bruce Banner in the head. And Hulk's like, oh, fuck, you got me. Okay.
Maybe that's an option.
Maybe that's what they're going to do in Avengers Endgame.
They're
going
to shoot Bruce Banner. If you don't come out.
I can imagine that in the film, like Steve Rogers going, okay, Bruce, it's the only way.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're going to have to shoot you in the head.
I understand. I did it before. Go ahead and shoot me.
Right. So, but you were saying
that the universe.
You think that in Infinity War, Thanos was a great villain.
Great villain. That was. Strongest part of the movie, really, because without Thanos there's no movie. The rest is good obviously, but really it's like, if you don't see the threat and you don't know why all these people will come together, if you don't realistically believe that all these people will come together to do all those things and fight, and you know, fight again, like find a bigger reason to cross paths and actually unite in spite of all their differences, all that, it all stands, you know, on Thanos. I mean, Thor being with the Guardians, it's funny. Like, you know, like, having all these characters, like, interacting. For example, in the next movie, we're going to have, like, you know, Ant-Man and Captain Marvel, which is just, like, you want to see that. Because you've seen Ant-Man deal with, like, you know, the superhero stuff. Or, like, when Spider-Man ended up in space. It's just fun to watch those people interact.
We were talking about getting the balance right.
Okay? Yeah.
It is a strange, slightly precarious, like, circus act that we've got going on in terms of balance.
Yeah.
Because you've got, on one hand, very sort of quite serious characters with...
Gods,
yeah. Like Thor, who used to be a serious character, and he's become more humorous.
Yeah, they kind of changed it. He was very boring. They had to tweak it. Because it would have been insufferable to have. No, his solo movies would have been dead, basically. It was okay to see him, like, in Avengers next to Tony Stark, you know, that was okay. Or next to Hulk, testing his strength and, you know, being the kind of the ideal of honor and, you know, all this stuff. Yeah. But on his own, it was just so dour and boring.
So, but you do have that, they've changed him now, but you still have those kinds of big, serious characters.
Yeah.
And then on the other end of the scale, you've got the small, lightweight, funny characters, like Ant-Man.
Ant-Man, Rocket Raccoon, you know, I mean, he's a raccoon. I don't know how they pulled it off, but there's a CGI raccoon, and you never think, oh, there's a CGI raccoon.
But he's one of my favorite characters because, you know, as we see in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, there's just such emotional...
Yes.
Depth to him.
Even in Guardians, when you see like the scars in his back, you know that he's been tortured. You know, all of the Guardians have this kind of trend of a lot of abuse, a lot of loss. You know, very dark, almost like lower class heroes.
Yeah,
you know, that just had to struggle through the universe with all the powerful people stepping on them. And you know, you see, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Rocket Raccoon is. Yeah, he's very touching because you realize that he's completely alone in a way.
Completely.
There's no one. He doesn't have any family. Nope. There's no one else like him because he's a unique creature that's been created by scientists. Exactly. So that's quite sad.
Kind of horrible.
Lonely and sad. But he's brilliant.
Brilliant.
But he's got so much. He's got so many personality issues.
Yes, yes. Oh.
Like so much deep-seated... deep-seated neurosis, which affects his behavior and makes him do ridiculous, stupid things.
Also, he's funny.
He's very funny and very.
It's real.
He's got loads of funny comebacks, and he's got a bad attitude,
and also he loves killing people. Sometimes there's a scene in. In the first one, when they're getting out of prison, he basically lists all the things he needs, and he lists also like some guy's eye.
He's also obsessed with collecting other people's body parts.
Exactly, some guy's eye or some guy's leg, and once he has everything, and people are like, "What is the leg for?" It's like, "No, I just want the leg."
Yeah,
I just like having a leg.
And he wants to get the Winter Soldier's arm.
Yeah, exactly.
How much for the arm? It's not for sale.
Not for sale.
Yeah. How much for the gun? It's not for sale. How much for the arm? He's like, "I'm going to get that arm."
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he got Thor's eye.
Yeah, he gave Thor an eye, which was very move, touching moment.
As everybody does, he had a spare eye.
I don't understand how that eye works.
Who doesn't have a spare eye?
Can Thor see through that eye, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a mechanical eye he stole from someone during Guardians 2, something like that.
It does allow Thor to see with depth. Yeah. He's got depth perception again. Because to be honest, I was a bit concerned for Thor when he lost his eye in Thor Ragnarok. Because I thought, that's going to affect his fighting ability, surely.
Don't swing that axe. You're going to cut yourself.
Yeah, exactly. If you're wielding a huge axe around the room, like he does in Endgame, as we see from the trailer.
He wields.
You're going to need depth perception so you don't cut off your friend's head.
Hush. You're going to need it.
So thank goodness for Rocket Raccoon and the smaller, weirder characters that balance out the bigger, more serious ones.
Yeah, definitely something you need. You can't just have all these super powerful characters. Yeah, the core of it is you have the engineer Tony Stark, self-made to the extent that he has no powers, and he basically created his own power. You have Captain America, which is like the brave character, originally the national emblem, which was just paraded as kind of during World War II to support the troops, Captain America punching Hitler,
to sell government bonds to pay for the war effort,
and turned into more of a agent of freedom to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, some aspects of Captain America are cheesy into the nth degree, where he's this American superhero.
He's called Captain America.
He's called Captain America.
He has a shield with a big star on it.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? Yeah. It's terrible. But I love Captain America. He's one of my favorite characters.
Of course.
Despite the fact that his name is Captain America.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, really? Captain America?
But see, that's where Marvel is good, is that they really get this kind of hokey, cheesy thing about Captain America, and they turn him into, like, you because you've seen him over the course of several movies, you see, again, they all lost a lot of things. And, his struggles, his battles... For justice. He's really kind of the more classic justice superhero.
Yeah, he's a bit like Superman in that way.
Exactly,
the ideology that he represents.
Exactly, but, closer to that.
Yeah, Steve Rogers, Captain America, is interesting because he starts out as this weak little guy.
Mm. Yes,
who has got sort of health issues, and he's not quite strong enough.
Too scrawny
to join up for the army, but somehow he gets in. And
he gets on the program. Basically.
He gets on the program, and he's the thing that he has, even though he's not physically strong, is he's got the spirit.
Yes, he already has. He always had the spirit all along. All he needed is the body.
Yeah, and he manages to win over the heart of Peggy Carter.
I
love Peggy Carter. Yes,
great character.
What's her name? Haley Atwell,
the actress,
English actress. Yes. Yeah.
No, I mean, also great casting. Yeah, I think there was a list of like all the actors, Glenn Close, Robert Redford, Hayley Atwell, yeah, as you mentioned. Who else? Cate Blanchett.
Yes.
Who else is that? Yeah. Kurt Jeff Russell. Bridges, Michael Douglas, Kurt Russell, yeah, I forget. Benicio del Toro, Tilda Swinton. I mean, they just
managed, the list goes on and on.
They managed to get, like, really, for some small parts, a lot of very good actors. That also helps. That also helps to sell all of that comic book thing.
Yes, definitely. It does. I mean, as we go through this rambling conversation, there are going to be some things that we're missing.
Yeah.
As I said before, we can't possibly cover everything. But, Infinity War was great because of the villain and all that stuff. Let's talk about Kevin Feige. Is that how
Feige?
Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Kevin Feige. So who is Kevin Feige?
So Kevin Feige is basically the boss of the studios. Mm-hmm. He's the main producer. You'll see his name in the credits of all the movies. And he's the man who brought to life this universe. So as I said, in 2008, Dying Company, and they didn't have the choice, and they only had the small characters. And bit by bit, I mean, it was quite smart because they started really slowly. They said, okay, we're going to have the Avengers if it works, but let's start with, like, basically small character movies. We're going to do Iron Man, we're going to do Thor, we're going to do Captain America. Like, among the bunch we're left with, let's find the best ones. So let's give them to, like, good directors, people who write well, and let's do, like, three movies.
Mm, sorry.
Let's just try to, like, establish something small. Mm. And he's the unifying figure around all these movies, like, for the last 11 years and probably more. I mean, I don't know how long it has been in development, probably since like 2005 or something like that. He's the guy, and that was the other part that was so unique, is that you had one person who really represented the spirit of the MCU and who was at the center of all the operations and managed to, while keeping the control of, like, all the operations, manage to, like, give away enough power to enough people, creative people, to, you know, he trusted a lot of people in order to get these movies out there and, you know, find the right people, find the right directors, the right screenwriters, the right, you know, actors. You have Star Wars. That's, like, the other, I would say, big
film franchise.
You have maybe James Bond as well. That's also pretty big.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter, but that's a little different because it was, I mean, one set of books, and then that was it.
I feel like they're trying to keep the franchise going.
It's not working. Let's not go too deep into the Crimes of Grindelwald, it's not working.
I haven't seen those new Harry Potter films.
You don't need to.
Okay, fine.
But yeah, like, really, he took all those disparate units of intellectual properties and just brought them together in such a great fashion. Now, I was saying, like, you don't really hear about producers much in the movie, you know, industry, because you don't really, they're not, you know, they're in the background, they're, you know, doing their thing, earning their money, not being at the forefront. But he's really, like, the main thing. If there's one, maybe apart from Robert Downey Jr., who, because he's jump-started a project, is this one figure, and it's quite rare, it's Kevin Feige. Yeah. And I think he managed through, like, 10, 11 years, you know, to not lose his mind, even when it was working so well, you know. I mean, you look at, for example, as you said, the Batman in Tim Burton, or even Star Wars to some extent. Like, when it gets big, sometimes people lose their mind a little bit.
You mean something like when a film franchise that is run by one person gets so big, that one person can lose their judgment.
Exactly.
Like George Lucas, maybe, arguably,
exactly,
with the prequel films, the prequels, in the 90s and the early noughties, that he didn't have the same level of judgment. He was surrounded by yes men.
Yeah, definitely.
And it led to, I think most people agree, those prequel films are a bit of a mess.
Yes,
And
a bit of a mess.
Well, I have listeners who, whenever I talk about Star Wars and I say I don't like the prequels, I have listeners who say, I love the prequels.
There
are people who love those films.
Obviously.
Because they've got their own thing going on, but, you know, they've got, like, a sort of certain...
Let's say a bit of a mess in terms of, like, you clearly see that it's opinions, you know, tastes and colors. You don't necessarily have to agree, but I think they went off the rail a little bit. or yeah, I mean, usually with those big franchises, even more than having a yes man or whatever, it's usually that people just get greedy. They start to make sequels that are not really justified, or, you know, they rush projects. Or like, I mean, even to a certain extent, we'll talk about Star Wars later, but, you know, there's some kind of the way those movies and, in the end, at the center of it, intellectual properties are managed, because they want to just get as much money out of them as possible. Usually just, yeah, kind of rush it. And somehow Marvel, I don't think not all 21 movies are like stellar or like amazing. But first of all, I think that overall they got better with time. Yeah. Like even a smaller, like comparing a small movie like, I don't know, the Thor to like a small movie like Ant-Man now, like I feel like they got better in general.
Yeah.
And also they never really had like a bad one, you know, like no. A terrible one that completely ruins, like, you know, people go out and like, oh my god, you know, we've seen 10 and the 11th is like such a terrible one that we won't go back.
Even things like they've never released a film that's divided audiences in the way that The Last Jedi did. They've never released a film that got completely panned by the critics. Yeah.
Usually sometimes it's like, it was fine, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, some of them, even like the last Captain Marvel, is not like amazing. It's good.
Some of those films, I can take them or leave them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, people always say Thor, The Dark World, Thor 2.
Yeah, it's like...
But there is some appeal to that. Like,
of course.
I like some of those bits.
It's not completely... It doesn't completely fall apart. But also, I mean, apart from not falling apart, it doesn't... You see that overall, like, the general trend of quality over the movies, it just stays strong.
Yeah.
Strong enough to get to Avengers Endgame and everybody's pretty much engaged.
Everyone's still on board.
Yes, exactly. There's no character that's completely bust, you know.
Unlike the DC universe. Where, you know, they kicked off the...
Do you want to talk about it for a minute?
Just for a moment. So, so obviously we had the Christopher Nolan Batman films. Yes. And on the strength of that, DC were like, right, let's kick it into overdrive.
Yes.
Let's create the DC cinematic universe.
Yes.
And they started off with Superman.
Man of Steel.
Man of Steel, right?
Let's call Zack Snyder.
Zack Snyder, Man of Steel. Now, personally, I thought it was a... I thought some of it I liked. Yeah. I really enjoyed
the... Basically, the first half of it.
Yeah.
Really good. And then... Oof.
And then it just became... Guys smashing into buildings.
The loudest movie. Typically what you said, it was a super powerful person punching super powerful person. And it's just this kind of... It's so weird. I don't know how... For me, it's so obvious that it's probably the most terrible thing to do where you don't set levels. You know, there's no level of power. There's no... way to compare powers to anyone in the movie. There's
no hierarchy of powers.
Exactly.
There are no rules. There's no weaknesses.
There are no
parameters defined.
Yeah, exactly. There's no scale. He's strong and is also strong.
So you've got basically Superman, who is as strong as it's possible to be, as far as we can tell, and General Zod, who is the same.
Yeah,
they are the same. And the only drama in that fight scene is that it takes General Zod a little bit of time to work out how to do it.
But again, it doesn't in 2 minutes. Yeah. So really,
some of the moments were quite cool, like when the bad guys come down and they're in those suits. And they're having fights with fighter jets and things.
Yeah.
Those moments were like, wow, that's pretty cool. But
yeah, like what he tried to do with this idea of what if it actually happened, quote unquote, you know, like the fearfulness, I don't know, how people will be afraid of having those super humans or meta humans, I don't know how they call them, coming to Earth actually. And like punching planes and blah blah blah, but in a very serious tone. But it ended up just being like, you know, basically destruction.
Yeah, fantasy. just buildings being smashed down. You just kind of think Superman is supposed to save.
So loud.
And Superman is supposed to save people. He doesn't anyone. He doesn't save anyone in that.
But
film.
You know what? I was kind of okay with going for an unlikable Superman. Like I was okay if you do it. Because basically, the way his parents raise him in the movie, which I find, I mean, it's not really Superman canon. It's not usually how Superman is told, but they tell him, you know, you don't owe these people anything. You don't have to save everybody. You can hide your identity, which, okay, I mean, you don't have to tell the Superman story one way, but if you do it, you know, in a, I don't know, in the, I forget the word, but if you do it and it makes sense all the way through, basically, okay,
in a consistent way.
At least you have a consistent character at the end, and that's fine, you know? Then you can deal with that and see what you can get from that character. But then, as you said, it's still kind of, he was reluctantly saving people and like almost making a face while saving babies.
Because it's like Superman's supposed to be our hero.
Yeah,
he's supposed to be selfless, yeah. And that is a good thing.
You're supposed to like him.
That's a good thing. That's a good value.
I know.
It's a good value that we want. The reason why Superman is important is because he represents that selfless sort of savior of the world, and he's someone for us to look up to. Instead, they made Superman like this fairly selfish individual, basically, which is like fine. You know,
it was like remember when you liked Superman? Yeah. Like, oh, those were the days.
The best thing about it was Kevin Costner, basically, because it was quite nice to see him as a father figure.
Yeah.
That was nice. But
even though I always found his death scene kind of silly.
I don't remember it.
There's a dog.
Yeah,
there's a tornado, and people are getting out of the cars, and the dog is stuck in the car. He gets the dog, and when Superman comes to save him, he basically looks back and like tells him, you know, makes a gesture like, no, don't, because he will have to reveal his power to save his dad. So his dad looks back and is like, don't come save me.
Don't reveal your power by saving me.
Exactly. And again, it's, you know, it's a kind of, but you never see Superman dealing with that in any fashion. It's just like, ugh. It doesn't reap any benefit to do that.
But the reason why we talked about that is because you were saying that the Marvel movies have managed to maintain consistency, and none of the films were weak enough to break the franchise.
Yeah.
Whereas with Superman, Man of Steel, everyone thought that was not very good, but I'm still willing to see if the next one's going to be all right. And basically, they're all terrible except for Wonder Woman, which was all right. I thought it was okay.
It was okay.
Mainly because, how do you say her name? Gal Gadot. Yeah, she was just wonderful as the character. I found her really naive and wide-eyed, naive superhero who was just so sweet.
I loved that about her character. I didn't love the movie. I thought it was fine. I think it has one of the best scenes in superhero movies, the trench scene in World War One. Apart from that, it was fine. And again, the ending was horrid.
The ending was terrible. It's just, again, another superhero ending where it's just two CGI characters
smashing.
It's
like a god battles a god. It's like, okay.
Yeah, who cares? But Marvel, they managed to avoid all those traps.
So DC went Man of Steel. Then the next one, they went Batman versus Superman, which is already like such a huge movie. Technically, you bring together two of the biggest superheroes in the world. And what you have to do in that movie is first tell us who Batman is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know Batman. We don't know this Batman, you know. And you can't just like pretend that, you know, oh, people know him already. That's not how movies work. You don't like base movies on like previous assumed previous knowledge of people.
Sometimes you do with sequels.
Yeah, but not with setting a brand new character.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a brand new
version of a character.
Yeah.
So you have to do that. You have to deal with the fact that they're battling each other. It's too much. It's too rushed. Also, it does not work. That movie is terrible.
You know what?
The movie is so funny.
There are some things I did like about it. The bits with Batman, basically, where he's...
The opening is good.
Yeah.
The fights in with Batman are okay. Yeah, no, it's fine, but it's so... It takes itself so seriously, but, and it's so silly.
Tell me, do you bleed?
Do you bleed? I can't.
Do you bleed?
A sentence that comes back in Justice League Batman is like, tell me, do you
bleed? It's like, I bleed.
It's like, tell me, do you bleed?
Because listeners, if you remember, originally it is Batman. He's got himself. He's decided that he needs to take down Superman.
Why?
And he builds this sort of super metal suit. Which, there's no way you can build a suit that's going to beat Superman.
The son of a bitch brought the war to us.
It's Superman, for goodness sake. And then he manages, he gets to see. You know, all the things I like about Batman versus Superman, which are not that many things, all of them are the same things I like about the comic book, The Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, I read that one.
Frank Miller graphic novel comic book,
I read that.
Which is absolutely fantastic. And they stole certain things from it, like the the kryptonite arrow, which explodes,
some imagery as well.
It explodes in Superman's face, and that allows Batman to then fight on the same level as him, which I think is a fair thing.
A few things, like even the nuclear explosion in Superman going to space, and you know, being rejuvenated by the yellow sun.
Yeah,
some stuff they took from there. Yeah, but it doesn't gel at all
as a film. It's a piece of piece of shit, piece of crap, piece of junk, piece of junk. Let's say
it's a piece of
shit. I thought it was a piece of shit. That's what like hillbillies, even hillbillies. Didn't
I thought
like
it was a piece of shit.
I didn't think it made sense at all. okay.
Yeah, you don't know why he's fighting him. You don't know. Lex Luthor is not good.
No.
Because they tried to make a Joker character, even though they're completely different. It's such a mess.
Lex Luthor, played by, I can't remember his name.
Jesse Eisenberg.
Jesse Eisenberg, who normally is great, but it was a superbly miscast.
Superbly miscast, yes.
And
it's really a super...
horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible performance. Yeah. But, you know, tried. He fair play to him.
I mean...
He tried, but it didn't work.
Badly written. It's just,
and then we end
Clark
up with
Kent, terrible character. Ugh.
And then basically, because DC had decided, right, we're leading up to Justice League, so we've got to do it. We've got to finish what we started.
Yeah, grandfather.
They ended up doing Justice League, and let's not even talk about it.
Yeah, I don't want Aquaman. Did you watch Shazam?
No, I haven't seen Shazam.
So, in 30 seconds, Shazam has pretty positive reviews. Like, I check IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes, and I thought it was not good.
I mean, like, just one thing. I haven't seen it. As far as I can tell, just from the publicity I've seen, it looks like a kind of ironic superhero film. But is it something like Deadpool?
No. Yes, it's like almost like PG-13 Deadpool. Except that, remembering the first Deadpool, it was super simple story. Almost like super basic. Guy gets powers, girl gets kidnapped, guy saves girls. And then around that, they made the whole jokes and, you know.
Yeah.
It was more of like setting the mood, you know, making fun of superheroes, you know, etc. In Shazam, they... I don't think it's really well paced or written. I think like it's just forced, you know. It's rushed. They rush everything. I think the core of Shazam is pretty good, like the character stuff. It's so rushed that you don't have any time to enjoy anything, and by the time anything happens, it's just like, why? It's the kind of movie where everybody bumps into, you know, like every character bumps into other characters in the street. Because they don't know how to set the scene, you know. Like, you know, imagine, like, you know, I don't know. You have a movie where you're supposed to have an emotional scene with your wife, but instead of setting it at your house, you bump into each other in the street. It's like, why? You know?
You mean
it's
like,
just awkward.
You mean like the way in bad soap operas?
Yeah, exactly.
Characters always just come to each other's houses.
Happens to just always be in the same room.
And as one character leaves the house, the other character just happens to be coming. Oh, hi.
Imagine if basically you went to, I don't know, the Parc Monceau, you know, like any big park, Central Park, and you bump into like your wife. What are the chances? You know what I mean? And it's like everything is kind of like forced and like
badly written, basically.
It's badly written.
Where the lines of the story don't quite join up together.
There's a whole section where, for example, Shazam discovers his powers, which in itself is a fun scene, but basically it's like he gets the power and then. He goes home to meet his buddy, basically, because he's in a foster home, and so he's like his foster brother, and they just go out and start discovering powers. But there's no like no time to like acknowledge how weird it is, and to they're like, you have superpowers, let's go and try this, and they literally bump into two different like they go into a park again, and they bump into like somebody being robbed. So they can test the power, and then they go to a little shop, like a bodega, whatever, to buy beer. And there they also bump into like people coming to rob the thing. So it's kind of like,
basically the story. The writers of the story were like, okay, so the characters are now going to find out their powers, exactly. And conveniently, here are some criminals.
Conveniently, they bump into every single criminal in Philadelphia that night. It's like, why? You know, kind of. I don't know.
The thing I don't like about Shazam, I haven't seen it, but I've only seen trailers and the adverts for it. The thing that turns me off is just the guy's haircut. I'm like, no, I'm not going to see that film.
I think
I don't like the haircut.
I really hate his fingers. I'm not seeing the movie.
In this case, it's the hair. I'm not going to go and watch that hair for.
But it's a little
minutes.
Silly. It's very much a comedy in the way Ant-Man is. Actually, you know, okay. It's very much a comedy. But when you don't find the comedy funny, it's just so hard. So hard.
Yeah.
I don't find it funny.
It's a pity, isn't it? When comedy doesn't work, when comedy doesn't land.
Oh my God. Don't we know it?
We know it well.
There's no way to go around it. I just didn't laugh. And for all the virtues of the movie, possibly, I didn't laugh.
Yeah. Well, anyway. That talking of Ant-Man, that is one of the great things about Ant-Man. I mean, I'm not that into him flying around on ants. I mean that idea. What's the name of the ant that he flies around on?
Anthony.
That's it. Anthony or Anthony or something.
Antoinette. I don't know.
In England, we'd say Anthony, but I think he calls him Anthony.
Yeah, Anthony.
But he keeps calling up Anthony, and this ant flies in. It's like just it. The control over ants that they have is just a step too far for me. I'm just thinking that there's no way.
Oh, that's a step too far?
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's enough. Like, just the fact that they can summon an army of ants and the ants know exactly what to do. Yeah. I'm sorry. I know that we're talking about going to space and all that, and the Hulk and all that stuff, but just, I don't know.
But really, enslaving insects, I will not stand for it.
the best thing about Ant-Man are those scenes where what's the Latino guy, the Hispanic guy,
Michael Peña
when he summarizes the story,
exactly. Really funny.
I bet it's on YouTube. I bet we can find Ant-Man Michael Peña funny scene. Okay, is this going to be from Ant-Man 1?
Yeah, Louis story.
Louis storytelling about Tip. What? Louis tells a story
about a tip. I think
basically
somebody
this
gives
is
him
just
a tip.
The way that this character tells stories in the film is just hilarious. I mean, we're going to hear the audio now, but it works best with the video because the thing is that every single character in the story is speaking with Luis's voice.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant.
As he's speaking, you see the image of the scene happening with other characters speaking with his voice. It's quite well done.
So it's probably not going to work with just audio, but nevertheless, I want to watch it now.
Check it out on YouTube. Ant-Man Michael Peña.
You'll find the
P-E-N-A.
You'll find the video on the page for this episode, right? And also, another thing about this is that he speaks very quickly, and that's kind of the point. So, I don't know, you might not understand this, or in fact, any of this conversation that we're having at all, but let's just have a look at this clip from Ant-Man.
All right.
Tell me about that tip.
What?
I want to know about that tip. Yeah.
So he's basically asking about a crime job.
Yeah, because they're going to rob Pym's house, Hank Pym's house.
Yeah, so basically Ant-Man, played by, what's his name?
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd is asking Luis about a tip, which is basically that he knows of a good burglary or robbery that they could do.
Because
And he's now going to explain this great robbery that they should do. Right? Okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, baby time.
Hot dogs.
It's so on right now.
Calm down, all right? I just need to know where it came from. It's got to be airtight.
Okay. I was at a wine tasting with my cousin Ernesto, which was mainly reds, and you know I don't like reds, man, you know, but there was a rosé that saved the day. It was delightful. And he tells me about this girl, Emily, that we used to kick it with. It was actually the first pair of boobs that I ever touched.
It's the wrong details. It's the wrong... It has nothing to do with the story. Go.
So, he tells me that she's working as a housekeeper now, right? And she's dating this dude, Carlos, who's a shot caller from across the bay, and she tells him about the dude that she's cleaning for, right? That he's like this big shot CEO that is all retired now, but is loaded. And so Carlos and Ernesto are on the same softball team, and they get to talking.
The thing is that they're so bad at telling stories because it's all these unnecessary details, and I'm already confused. Like, who's Carlos? I don't know, but let's keep listening.
Right, and here comes the good part. Carlos says, yo, man, this guy's got a big-ass safe just sitting in the basement, just chilling. Of course, Ernesto comes to me because he knows I got mad demon skills. Of course, I ask him, did Emily tell Carlos to tell you to get to me what kind of safe it was? And he says, nah, dog. All she said is that it's, like, super legit, and whatever's in it, it's got to be good. What?
Old man have safe.
I love that. It's like, what? Old man have safe. Like, that's basically
old man have safe.
The whole story can just be summarized as old man have safe.
Yeah,
a safe.
Exactly.
A safe is like a box that you would put money in, for example.
Valuables
and so on. Have we run our course here? Have we got to the end now? What else is there to say?
We've skipped around.
We've talked about the Avengers films and stuff. Mm. We talked about Kevin Feige and all that stuff. Yeah. So anyway, Avengers Endgame, any predictions? What do you think is going to happen? So this is where we're going to pause this conversation, and we will carry on in part two. I hope you're keeping up with all of this. As I said at the beginning, I think it might be difficult for some of you to follow, but challenges are good, and it's important to try and listen to these fast conversations. Hopefully you're into the subject enough to keep listening, and that's the main thing. Practice, practice, practice. So part two will be available to you soon, and our conversation will carry on there, talking mostly around the subject of Avengers Endgame, but also there's some talk of Star Wars because episode 9 is coming out later this year, and a new Star Wars trailer arrived recently. If you're a fan, then these things are quite important in a way. Obviously, it's not the most important thing in the world, but, you know, films and being into films, these sorts of things can make you happy. And that's important. So, there's about 30 minutes more conversation from Fred and me in part two. And then also, I will talk a bit on my own about some other stuff like fan theories for Avengers Endgame and just some of my own thoughts about the film. Feel free to leave your comments. If you've now seen the film, like you might be listening to this after a few days after I've uploaded the episode. So if you have now seen the film, please avoid writing spoilers in the comments section, or at least flag up the fact that your comment contains spoilers by writing the phrase spoiler warning at the top of your comment. I'm going to see Avengers Endgame tomorrow because new films are released on Wednesdays here in France. So I think I'm probably going to see it a couple of days before it's released in many other countries in the world. And I might record some kind of reaction to the film or a non-spoiler review of some kind. And then maybe after a certain number of weeks, I'll do some kind of spoilery discussion of the film. I don't know. I can't say. I don't always plan everything out in advance fully. But anyway, I'm seeing it tomorrow. I might record some sort of response to seeing it. There you go. Then, of course, after all of this hype has died down, and I mean, in my world, there is quite a lot of hype about Avengers Endgame. I go on YouTube quite a lot, and my YouTube recommended videos is full of videos about Avengers Endgame, and I'm seeing posters in the street now and stuff like that. So there's quite a lot of hype for this film. So anyway, after all this hype has died down, it will be back to podcasting as usual. There might be a little gap because I'm going away on holiday next week for about a week. So I will be sort of not podcasting for about a week. So there'll be a little gap, But normal podcasting will return, as you would expect. But that's it for part one. I expect part two will be available very soon, so you can carry on and get into some of the excitement. Okay, thank you very much for listening. I'll speak to you again in the next episode. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.